Wow. Whenever there's a baptism, I remember as a little boy, and in fact, I remember my dad saying it at my baptism, we have done as the Lord has commanded, and yet there's room. Remember that, Dad? And it's true. You and I have witnessed something very significant here today, but there's, may I put it in sort of more plain language, there's still water in the tank, all right? Which means there's room for you too. I'm actually perfectly prepared if somebody right now said, I want to get baptized. I'd say, go for it, brother, go for it, sister, and hug somebody else. I've been hugged 4 times in the back room, and it's drying. But no, it's really, really amazing. And let me say, if there comes a point for you when either it's your turn, it's time for you to kind of put it on the line, step out and be counted as a Christ follower. You can call us, call me, call the staff, anybody here, and we'll be happy to fill the tank again. In fact, I was commenting to a couple of the kids in the back, this is the Super Bowl. This is the program, y'all. When Jesus came, his parting words recorded by all 4 gospel writers and Luke again in the book of Acts is go and make disciples and make sure you baptize them as a starting point of journeying with me. So we're doing that here today, and I want to say a couple of things that are hopefully what you're thinking already, but this will clarify it in case you're not. Every single young person here made a decision, a personal decision. It was not the decision of their parents for them. Nor was it the decision of their youth pastor, Pastor Michael, or his wife Krista was involved in many of them, and others of the staff, or the volunteer team that does such wonderful things with the students here at our church. And this might be, if there's a cynic in the crowd, important for me to say. They didn't just get baptized because, well, it was a case of sort of peer pressure, groupthink. They got baptized today. Every one of them was asked a similar question. Have you decided to walk with Jesus, to follow Jesus? And the answer was, in every case, yes. In John's gospel, there are 4 gospels, and John is the 4th gospel. It turns out that Jesus, very early in that gospel, chapter 1, verse 43, issued what has come to be known as the very first invitation in the New Testament. It's not complicated, and it's definitely not long. He said it in 2 words, follow me. That's what you and I just witnessed here this morning, is young people saying to Jesus, I will follow you. And in fact, if I can extrapolate and continue and extend that beyond students, I would say it this way. The same 2-word invitation has been given by Jesus ever since to young people, to middle-aged people, and to senior people, very mature elderly people. Some who have walked with Jesus for a while and went, wait a minute, I need to put it on the line and go public with my relationship. I always think of this man. His name was Dennis. He's now with Jesus, but he called me, it turns out, a month before he died. And he had cancer that was fast moving. And he says, I have never said yes to Jesus. And I know my time is short. I want to do so, and I want to be baptized, but I'm not physically able to. And maybe some of you were even here when a group of elders from our church, godly, mature men, carried Dennis down into the waters, and he was baptized. And less than a month later, he was home with his Lord. It can happen in dramatic ways like that in the sort of last inning of his life. Can happen very young when there's bright futures ahead for these students. And by the way, it will be their experience going forward, that those 2 words will be tested, and they will be challenged at almost every point. So it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, we've got a role to play going forward to help them walk with Jesus. Because in little by little, big and small ways, they have decided to follow him. And it's on us as their church family, as brothers and sisters, to come alongside them and encourage them when the going gets tough. When the resistance grows among their peers at school, when they become young adults and have choices to make that have great consequence in life. It's significant to me that when Jesus said, follow me, he did not say, figure me out. Did he? And he didn't say, wait until all of your questions are answered and then make your move. He said, follow me. Jesus didn't say, work to get your act together or your problems resolved. Then give me a try. No, he said, follow me. These words that I'm going to read to you right now made a real clarifying sort of point in my mind when I read them. And they're timely right now for you to consider how those two words apply in your life. Am I following Jesus, a question, or just believing in Christ? Do you see the distinction? He helps you with it if it doesn't come clearly yet. Because I can believe and not change a thing, but following will change my whole life. Jesus never said, come acknowledge my existence. But time and time and time again, in fact, 87 more times in the Gospels, Jesus said, follow me. Each one of these students was asked to share something of the way that Jesus is at work in them. Little hints of this came out. And it's a favorite prayer of mine, and if you want a dangerous prayer, I'll share it with you right now. They were being asked in one fashion or another, how is Jesus making you more like himself and less like yourself? Here comes my man, Logan. Right here, buddy. Thanks for not taking me in with you. Okay, buddy. How is Jesus making you more like him and less like yourself? That's really kind of a story of sanctification is the word the Bible uses. I've always been fascinated with rock climbers. Years ago when we lived in California, I remember being spellbound as I stood there at Yosemite looking up at Half Dome and El Capitan and squinting at first and then borrowing binoculars to see what was people hanging from the sheer granite faces of those monoliths. And cars would stop and people would get out and they would just be mesmerized by what they saw. And I did a little research because I was so intrigued by that, and there's Smith Rock here in Oregon and other places. And it seems that in the world of rock climbing, especially freelance or freehand, there's no ropes, there's no safety harnesses, things like that. In other words, it's for real. It's do or die. There are four ways you can hold on, obviously. Two hands and two feet. And there comes a point in a rock climber's journey vertical that one hand and two feet are firm and secure. And in order to make the next move, the other hand has to attach to a crevice or some kind of ledge and hold on as all other three, both feet and hand, readjust to a new point of holding. It's called a commitment move in rock climbing. And rock climbers, I'm told, that's the sheer terror of the journey up the side of a mountain. So they're if you got all both hands, both feet holding tight, everything's good. But at some point, you got to go further. And they call that a commitment move. Well, that's a little bit like what we just saw, a commitment move. Students saying at a very young age, I'm going to go all in for Jesus. Years before I came to Oregon, Debbie and I were very involved in what's called the powerful percent. 1% of the world's population is university students. If you add up all the students worldwide, 1% are university students. I was intrigued by that, and then I quickly made sense of why I was so drawn to that population. Because the distance between their head and their heart and their hands and their feet is the shortest as it will ever be any time in life. They don't have the clutter. They don't have the distractions. They don't have all of the sort of duties and commitments that hold them in one place for very long. We used to say, no, they're free of mortgage, MasterCard, and marriage. So they could get up and go. And I loved it because you could put a challenge in front of them, challenge them to make a commitment move, and very often they were ready to do it. Imagine my surprise when I discovered that, in fact, if you go as far back as you want in history, every major movement of God in this world has come about through young people. Indeed, the very coming of Jesus into the world came about not from a 35-year-old married woman, a teenager. That's the ultimate move God made, was to send his son into this world, and he chooses a teenager that says, sure, Mary's word, be it done to me as you have said. I'll trust you on your terms, God. I don't get it. She wasn't, you know, necessarily a standout a genius to make sense of something that had never been done before. She simply said, okay, I'll trust you. University students are renowned for things like the Great Awakening and the Protestant Reformation. Martin Luther was a young man, not an old man, not a grumpy, tired, cynical old guy. He was young, and he was paying attention, and he didn't like what he saw, and he felt prompted by God to change it. And so he did. Why do I tell you that? Well, oftentimes when I would speak to young people, we would have a commitment moment, a time when after the weekend, we would challenge young people to put it on the line for God, to make a commitment move. And oftentimes it would be in a final gathering, a meeting. If it was outdoors, there might be a fire down in front. And very often people would stand up and give testimony and say, you know what, I've decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. No turning back. I'm all in. Take the whole world, but give me the Savior. That's all I want. That's all I care about. On one particular occasion, it didn't happen to be one of the retreats that I was speaking at. I was told about this gathering similar to what I've just described. Very large gathering of young people. And an invitation was given to come and write out something that you're saying, God, a note to God, I'm tired of doing it my way. I want to walk your way from here on forward. And then they were invited to come down to the front and make that commitment by putting that in the fire, saying, God, whatever I was doing, it's no longer. I'm now going to go all out for you. There was one young man, late teens actually, who was in that gathering, and he was hard. He had lots of issues in his life, and a whole bunch of people, he didn't know it at the time, were praying for him. It came to this last meeting, and the invitation was given, and different people were coming forward, and then finally, and almost everybody stopped breathing in the moment, he made his way from the far back corner all the way down to the front. And he reaches his hand in his pocket and pulls out what's left of a pack of cigarettes, and he throws them in the fire. And in the day, that was a big deal. It's like, wow, you're breaking, you know, with something you've been doing a while, and that's going to be hard to follow through on and on and on. The person standing down at the front in an equally dramatic moment reached into the fire with a stick and brought the pack of cigarettes out of the fire, waited till it cooled off a little, picked it back up, and put the pack of partially burned cigarettes in his pocket, and said, "Young man, Jesus does not want your habit. He wants your heart." Y'all, that's the message of this today. That's what comes with witnessing what we just saw. It's God saying to us the same thing. Don't wait until you have it all figured out. Tell every question you have, every holdback that has kept you from moving forward with Jesus has been settled. Make a move. Decide to follow him. Let me ask you a question that we asked them. Do you see ways that, and I'll put it in these terms for us, if you've known Jesus, do you see a growing list of ways that Jesus is becoming more in charge of you? More on display, more visibly seen in attitudes, in decisions, in the course of your life? Don't wait until you have it all figured out. Follow him. Indeed, the Bible would say to all of us, you know something? My call to you, just as it is to the young people, is that you don't just change up a little something about your life, that you get off the path that you've been on and follow me a new way, a new direction. And it'll lead to amazing outcomes as you walk with him. There's no fire down here burning, but I want to invite you to close your eyes for a moment because I want to call you to a moment of commitment like we've watched and witnessed and heard this morning. With your eyes closed, I want you to go deeply into a place that you and only you have access to. I want to invite you to go to that place in your heart where only Jesus has the view you have. Only in his case, he knows it better than you do. And as you and he get a look around inside of you and your heart, in this moment, will you ask, really answer the question, Jesus, does my life show that you're in charge of me? That I have decided to follow you? It was clean and it was clear and it was pure in my heart when it happened. But things have gotten in the way, as they often do in life. It's not like I plan to walk away from you, Lord. But I find myself today surprisingly cooler than I used to be in my heart toward you. And today was way more than charming to me, Lord. It was upsetting in my spirit. Because I see something happening that's beautiful in the young hearts that represent teenagers today that are choosing you, and I know better, and I'm not. I don't know what's in the way and what you're looking at right now. Would you just, in your heart, give that to him? Is it a preoccupation with a problem? Is it a worry about life? One of the young people today, I think it was first service, talked about fear and overcoming fear, and I thought to myself as she spoke, I thought that's only a grown-up thing. Then I realized, no, you know, Jesus is working on fear issues in lots of hearts. Is yours one of them? And without getting up necessarily from your seat, will you just in this moment, identifying with that young man I described a little bit ago, will you say, you know what, I've just been trying to give Jesus a little piece of me. Turn over that sort of hang up, habit. But I see that he wants more. He wants me to make a all-in commitment move. If I'm describing you right now, would you just look up at me as though you're getting from your seat and making your way down? Thank you. Okay? Wow. Thank you. Are there others that you're saying, you know something? Thank you. I wanna go the path these kids are going. That's me. Thank you. Will everybody at this time stand, please? We're going to sing a song that's simply titled, Follow You, I'll Follow You. And especially to you who looked up right now as though you're saying, I'm coming forward and I'm saying, Jesus, it's all in front of you. I want to walk a different path. Will you worship in this song? Will you respond to him in the words of this song? Make them yours. And in a commitment move in your heart right now, will you say, Jesus, it's forward for you from here. God, that's what you want. The privilege of us witnessing what we have witnessed this morning is not just that it stirs in us those wonderful, simple, pure days, but it awakens in us an awareness of where we're at with you in our own lives right now. As the Apostle Paul said, I'm worried about you, lest as the serpent deceived Eve, you too should be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. That's what those words represent, Lord, a simple, pure decision to follow you. Help us to not just sing it, but live it. Like never before. In your wonderful name, Jesus, I pray. Amen. Earlier, you were asked to fill out a prayer request if you have something on your heart. Ushers are going to come at this time, and in this last song, as people are putting their offerings in there, I'm part of a group that prays for 20 years now. We've prayed every week for these prayer requests. Will you drop that in that plate, and we promise to be on our knees before God on your behalf. Let's respond to him in the words of this song.